This is the Air Raid Podcast presented by Viva the Matadors. This is the voice of Jeremy Gillen. We're talking about basketball, so let's just get into it. There's a lot to cover. I mean, we took off a week or so. Four games have happened. We've hit our lowest of lows, our highest of highs. So it just makes sense to boil it all down back to the basics. Red Raider basketball as it is. I got Dylan Smythe on with me, producer, leader of the Air Raid Podcast, our fearless champion. Dylan, hey.
Did you just call me a horse? Am I a horse now? Fearless champion?
Oh, okay. I don't. Is that the name of the horse this year?
I don't think that's always the name of the horse.
Mm-mm. Not true.
Oh, look at that.
There's a couple learned different names. New. Hey, we're learning. Texas Tech culture.
Anyways, yeah, basketball podcast. I think the idea is we're going to recap Vegas and then recap the win.
Yeah, there's a lot to cover. Dylan and I agreed pre-pod. We're not going to go through 40 to 120 minutes of basketball line by line. So we'll just kind of recap the nightmare that was Las Vegas. What can we look past? What really can we not look past? That's an underlying trend. And then kind of get to the meat of Louisville, with a big win for Texas Tech in New York in Madison Square Garden. So let's go ahead and kick it off. Just as a recap for everybody who doesn't know the entirety of the Las Vegas Invitational, we faced off against Iowa, lost pretty bad, 72-61. Then we faced Creighton in the third, or then we faced Creighton, excuse me, lost that in overtime, 83-76. And then we faced off against DePaul and lost that one in overtime, 65-60. Dylan, first thoughts.
You know, I wasn't as concerned as everybody else was after Vegas. It certainly addressed some problems that this team has. And if we want to look at just Vegas and ignore the big win, the problems are scoring outside of once Jamias Ramsey went down, scoring was hard to come by. Like Davide Moretti he's settling into his role of being the guy that everyone needs to guard. And then, down low, there's some issues, too. I think Holyfield's struggles in the last couple weeks have been troubling. But there's obviously signs to be positive. But I really wasn't that concerned coming out of Vegas, like losing your leading scorer. And then I wasn't expecting a win against Louisville. I was expecting us to come in and play, but wow.
Yeah, and we'll get into the excitement of that game. But if there's three main things, and you're right, there's really nothing to be this early on with the situation that we have, all new players, losing Jamias. It's not a lot to be afraid of or a lot to be remorseful about with the Las Vegas Invitational. But there are three things that I learned in Las Vegas. Wasn't there, but watching Las Vegas. Man, we turn over the ball a lot. TJ Holyfield, for me, in my perspective, and by the stat line, is just getting progressively worse. Emery Lida on our team did kind of like a stat analysis of Holyfield from his time at the beginning to now, and we are worse stats-wise when he's on the court. And I don't know how that changed in the Louisville game, but during Las Vegas, we were just worse if Holyfield was on the court, which sucks because he was supposed to come in and be a leader. And speaking of leaders, my third point I kind of took away is that we didn't really, coming into the season, I was expecting, not even hoping, but I was expecting Davide Moretti and Kyler Edwards especially to kind of lead this team, taking veterans as well as newbies and bringing them together and being like, okay, you've got experience, you've got youth and skill. We're going to tell you about Texas Tech basketball. Like, this is what it's going to look like. And I haven't really seen a lot of that leadership. Now, performance-wise, they're definitely calling the shots out there. Davide, Kyler, always getting the guys back into a huddle, always reminding them, kind of like Beard basketball. But when it comes to leading the team, when Jamias went down in the Iowa game, we were done. We couldn't put up shots to keep up, and whether or not they were getting away with some fouls or not is, you know, negligible because we weren't going to score enough points anyways. And then we come again to Creighton and it's just like, we didn't have a guy that could step up and make, you know, Terrence Shannon kind of, but I think Shannon at the beginning was playing so well off Ramsey that it was hard for him to make that adjustment. And then we saw it kind of in DePaul where he did make the adjustment, but neither, you know, didn't really get a lot of play from the other guys, so we lost anyways. Unfortunately, you know, RIP Davide's last free throw. So Las Vegas, we got a really good look at what, like, we just got punched around the whole tournament. I mean, do you have any big takeaways, or do you want to address mine? Are you feeling the same way about, like, Moretti and Edwards? Just with that, though.
Yes and no. I think the leadership is coming from a lot of places. Like, you don't see one guy being the true leader, and I think that's good in a lot of ways. The turnovers is a problem, and what you saw in Vegas was a lack of ball movement, or ball movement that didn't seem coordinated or designed, and I think that led to a lot of turnovers, and that got cleaned up a lot on and that big win against Louisville, and credit to Coach Beard for coaching those guys out of that. But there's still things to work on, but things to be positive about.
Okay, tell me your thoughts on Holyfield.
He has been the biggest disappointment this far. I think the biggest hole that we had to fill last season was not Jarrett Culver, but Tariq Owens. I think his interior defense was so crucial to our success, and we're seeing that TJ Holyfield isn't as good of a defender as Tariq Owens was, and that's my biggest concern going forward, because you saw that big guy, Luka Garza from Iowa, just run wild on us. And if Louisville would have fed their big man a little bit better too, I think he could have torched us as well.
Well, we'll get to that, because I have a lot of good insight about how we shut down Enoch and stuff. But man, absolutely, what a disappointment. And I'm sure if it's a slump and he comes out of it and does really great, then fantastic. But for the Las Vegas Invitational, I mean, he had 10 points in Iowa, only 2 points at Creighton, 0 points against DePaul. And okay, I'll get to the next thing. But like, coming into it, we were thinking, okay, who's going to replace Tariq Owens? Oh, we got TJ Holyfield. And the narrative surrounding Holyfield was, okay, not only is he going to probably be as agile and athletic a defender as Tariq Owens was, but he can actually shoot well. And at the beginning of the season, it appeared to be the case. Like, hey, feed Holyfield the ball, he'll shoot it, and it'll go in more times than not. So that's like he was going to really be a huge asset to this team in replacing Owens. And it seemed like it. And I was buying into it. I was really excited. Then we played Iowa. And I was like, oh, gee, still got 10 points, but they were kind of ugly 10 points. And he really racked up the fouls. And I was like, man, who are you? And then we played Creighton. And then I think that's the game he fouled out in. And I was like, or was it DePaul? Either way, he racks up so many fouls so quickly that I'm stuck at this point of like, okay, is this just aggressive defensive style of play that he hasn't caught up to, or is this legitimately like an issue where Holyfield will commit defense? Because it never, like, either way you slice it, Beard doesn't ever seem happy that Holyfield commits a foul. Like, he's always angry. The camera pans over and like he's getting a talk from Beard from across the court, which you never want. So I'm stuck between this rock and a hard place. It's like, I wish we just had Tyreek Smith in to get another guy that we could just throw in there to feed, because the other options are, you know, Rust Achiuwa and Savrasov. And for the early parts, it's like, you don't want to put Achiuwa in because he's not ready, although I love every time he touches the floor. And Savrasov, we just like kind of don't know, because he hasn't had a lot of the playing opportunity, because we were just kind of feeding Holyfield. We're just like, Holyfield all the minutes, and we'll kind of put Savrasov and Chewa in there as we need to. But then Holyfield's disappointing.
I wish I could give the Twitter user credit, but my favorite tweet of the week was TJ Holyfowl.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That was actually really beautiful.
Yeah. That seems to be his strong suit, is fouling, which is unfortunate. We just need him. We need him defensively more than we need him offensively, but then also let's offensively.
Golly. Yeah.
I can't, was it Creighton or DePaul where it was like down the stretch he had a wide open bucket right under the basket and just couldn't finish? Either I couldn't remember. Those games kind of blended together for me, but yeah. And then something to be said about the Iowa loss and then the loss after. They had two guys that couldn't miss. Like, Iowa, Bohannon couldn't freaking miss.
No,
and then
he couldn't, yeah.
The other guy's name, I don't even try and say. Zega or Regwa or whatever. Zegarowski or...
Zegarigwa.
Yeah.
You're talking about for Creighton, right? Marcus. Marcus Z. That's who it is. There you go. 32 points, yeah.
Hey, but we've been talking about how TJ Holyfield's been disappointing. Let's talk about TJ Shannon.
Hey, all right. Chi-Town represent.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and I kind of alluded to it, we had the game, and we'll go through his, because he got better. It seemed like he got better every game. So against Iowa, as soon as Ramsey went down, Shannon was put in more of a position of, you got to, finish this thing out. And they have been playing so well together. I don't think Shannon really was prepared mentally to be that ball handler. This is a team, reminder, that leads the nation in assists per game, which looks like a great stat. But there's this old adage in soccer where it's, one pass is too many, won't get you a goal. And that's kind of what it was like for Texas Tech. It's like we're passing around too much and just kind of giving up the open shot because we want to be a good teammate. And while that's all fair and good, you got to take a shot eventually. So take the best shot that's given to you, no matter whose hands it ends up being in. So Shannon in that game against Iowa, I think he only got 9 points. And then Creighton is the true game where he had to play without Jemias, and he ends up and he only gets 8 points. And you're just I think this is going to be a disaster because he's not getting the feed from Jemias, who's a really good ball handler. He can really create off the dribble. And then we get to DePaul, and Terrence Shannon puts up 24 points. He actually gets eight rebounds in that game too, which is phenomenal. He was playing dominant all night and really turned into this sculptory player that's just like, man, I wish we had you for those two games. We would have finished out really well. What, Dylan, what impressed you about Shannon's transition into this more leadership as a freshman role?
I mean, I think early on, you could see his strong suit was attacking the basket, and now he's leaning into it. He goes after the basket. And that's what we need from this team. We don't see too many people driving to the bucket, and driving to the bucket leads to nice kickout opportunities. And that's where David Moretti made his money last year. So I think once Jemias gets back, if him and Shannon could just really push the ball, tempo, push the ball, but then also look for those kickers outside. But Shannon showed us the NBA potential that he has. Like, that dude will be playing in the next level on the biggest stage. Like, that dude gets buckets.
Absolutely. And there's really only one other guy I'd love to cover for the Las Vegas Invitational. Somebody that has been kind of polarizing, but also not really, if you pay attention to the stats and his work ethic, is Chris Clark. But far and away, I think what sucks is that the theme of my tweets for those couple of nights was always at the end, it was that rebounds matter. Because it seems like when we could have had the game in hand, we let rebounds go, or we didn't fight for the ball, or whatever, and then we lose. Chris Clark has been an absolute dog under the basket, and I don't think anybody at this point can question his work ethic and his ability to secure the package when it comes under the rim. Against Iowa, had 10 rebounds. Against Creighton, he had 8. And then against DePaul, he had 11. And I will say he had less against Creighton. I think because he became more of a shooter that game, he actually had 17 points, which might be as high for the season so far. But Chris Clark is really, he's a positional player. I don't think we can afford to give up on our starting rotation. I know early on in the season, we kind of talked about, hey, who do you want to see on the starting rotation? Who do you think will be out first? And Chris Clark might've been a peripheral player. I just don't remember our conversation with that. At this point, I would not give him up for anybody on the squad just because he's such a dominant, he's so dominant on the defensive end. And I just don't think we can afford to lose that. Thoughts?
A couple stats for Chris Clark. And this is interesting to me because he took a lot of heat because he can't score the basketball. And then there are people within our own Viva the Matadors circle that were like, Chris Clark needs to go. Like, he's no good. What I say to you is, you are dumb. Chris Clark is in the top 5 in both assists and rebounds in the Big 12. That's freaking awesome. And then I actually have to read this stat to you because it's a mouthful. But the only player is top 50 nationally in assists and top 50 in defensive rebounds. The only player in top 50 assist rate and top 150 offensive rebounding rates. So Like, he's so... Ignore the points, and he's so valuable. He's our leading assist person and our leading rebounder right now. He is so valuable. I'd make the argument that he needs to start for us, but he does need to be a little more aggressive with the ball. Like, he needs to get to the bucket in order for... I think teams know he's looking to pass immediately. He's got to look for a shot just a little bit more. And that complaint's fair, but Chris Clark is so valuable to this team.
Absolutely. So, yeah. That all wraps up the Las Vegas Invitational. 0-3 going in felt like... Going in, it really felt like an opportunity for us to kind of solidify our rankings. We go in number 12. We come out unranked. It doesn't... There's no controversy there. We didn't deserve a ranking after that performance. But I will say... In defense, there's no justifying losing. I don't know. It depends how you look at it. But these are all tournament teams. Creighton, obviously good. DePaul, obviously good. Iowa is good just because of Luka Garza. The guy's a monster. It's kind of like Haas for Purdue and stuff like that. All those guys. It's just giant corn-fed dudes that just, I think they're birthed in cornfields and just pop up and... They're like, oh, yeah, come play basketball. And they're just really good at it. Should have been out for a concussion protocol, but who cares? Nobody cares about athletes anymore. But moving on, we come out of that 0-3. We're at the same kind of situation last year where we were on this large skid. Everybody's bailing. They're like, Texas Tech, they're just not ready. It's not the same team. Then they start citing everything they usually cite. Chris Beard's a good coach, but they lost, you know, they were only ranked because out of respect for him, which kind of makes sense, but you know, they replaced all this talent. They just can't, they're not the same team. They're not good defending. And all of that perspective was valid from what that 3-game case study, I will say to all of you, that was valid. Your worries were valid. Your concerns about scoring were valid, all of it. And then we go to New York. We go to Madison Square Garden, where a year ago we went toe-to-toe with Duke. And even though we lost in double digits, it felt like a victory for the program. There was a standing ovation from Red Raider faithful. I mean, first time I think we heard Raider power on national television in a place that was supposed to be neutral ground. Actually, probably more favored in Duke's favor, but ended up hearing Raider power. Coming back, 0-3 skid. You're facing off against the number one team in the country, Louisville. You want to reticent how you felt before that game? I did not think we would win. I didn't even think we'd play well.
I didn't expect Ramsey to play, and because I didn't expect Ramsey to play, I didn't expect to win. I thought, I did think we could hang, but I really didn't expect to win. I didn't expect to get blown out by any means, but once I knew Shannon... Once I knew that Jamias wasn't going to play, I thought it was going to be trouble. But this team, and credit to Coach Beard, he said two things for him. He said two things to the team before they took the court is, play harder than you've ever played for me before, and then I want another standing ovation by the time this game is over. And he got both of them.
Man, here's what I loved about, and I was... Like you, as soon as I realized Jamias, and he kind of teased it. He's like, Jamias is day to day. We don't know. We'll decide 30 minutes beforehand. And in my heart of hearts, I was like, okay, obviously he's not playing, but I wanted to believe, you know. And then he comes out and sweats. I was like, well, that's it. We're going to lose. But there was a moment where Jeff Goodman put up a video of Beard walking to the stadium, which is hilarious to me in the rain. And he asked him, like, hey, no Jamias. He's like, yeah, just kind of like do protocol and 30 minutes beforehand. And he's asking, you know, how are you going to beat Louisville? Like, how are you going to do this? You know, what's your game plan? He said, well, we don't have to be the better team. We just have to be the better team for 40 minutes. And for some reason, there's just like this charisma to the guy, this magic and way he says things that I thought, you know, we might have a chance. And that's that Beard effect. And I think the players had the same effect. They get coached by one of the best in the league in today's game. And you're right. They came out, and the first thing that was striking was the defense. Our defensive play was just like unavoidably different than Las Vegas. There was better rotation. There was better switching. There was recognition of, you know, ball screens, everything. Like, there was just, it seemed like a totally different team. I mean, and I guess that's, again, the beard effect. I don't know. You can't ever count out Texas Tech. So you start early. I think Louisville got on the board first. And then it was pretty much, you know, back and forth, whammy, whammy. A couple of runs here, a couple of runs there. Let's stop each other. But for all intents and purposes, I felt like Texas Tech had a control of that game, because while we weren't making all the shots at the beginning, nobody really made all the shots throughout the game. We were right at about 40% field goal, and Louisville was at 34. So it's a horrible night shooting for both. Just like last year, I recognized this team as, even if we don't shoot well, we're going to win this because we're keeping them from shooting well. Is that kind of how you felt, at least at the beginning?
Well, in the beginning, I was actually a little concerned because TJ Holyfowl struck again. And then, well, and then so did Terrence Shannon. Terrence Shannon got into trouble too.
Too early. Yeah.
Yeah. Too real early. And well, and then came Avery Benson, the hardest playing player on the court. You know, Avery Benson really saved us in that first and second half. But yeah, you're right. It comes down to, we held them to 34% shooting, and those are numbers from last year. And that defense wasn't quite there yet, but they were locked in against Louisville. And it's all about just the communication of knowing where you need to be at all times, and that sense of how early your help needs to come. And it was there against Louisville.
Right. So Shannon goes out early with two fouls pretty quick, and everybody's like, oh, hell, that's that's not good, because if he picked him up that quick, he's going to pick up another two pretty quick. And then so Beard intelligently pulls Shannon. You got Benson in. Dylan, I'm going to give you a minute here just to tell me everything you want to say about Avery Benson. I would love to just remind everybody that's listening, Avery Benson playing for Coach Beard at Arkansas Little Rock. Beard gets the call to go to UNLV and then to Tech. Benson says, hey, I want to go with you. And I think Chris Beard's paraphrased words are, I'd love for you to go with me, but I can't give you a scholarship at a D1 school. And Benson, instead of hanging his head, said, that's fine. And then walks on at Texas Tech. And then now look at him.
Yeah, something Andrew Sorrells from last year's team, he tweeted that he was the hardest working guy on the team last year, and he would come from a manual labor job because he's not on scholarship. He's got to work, you know. He'd come from that manual labor job, show up to practice, and outwork everybody, and that's Avery Benson. So I pitched this idea to Albie in our season preview podcast, was like, Avery Benson might get considerable minutes or maybe even start a game or two because he's one of the only players on our roster with experience, and it showed, and I think you could make the argument again. I'd like to see him continue to get minutes, and who knows, if an injury goes down, I want him to start. I want him to be the first guy up.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can doubt Benson's just ability to step in off the bench against a number one team in Madison Square Garden, the mecca of college basketball. Avery Benson comes in and denies a McDonald's All-American basketball player an easy layup at the end of the first half. His first block, I was like, all right, Avery, cool. Like, that was great. Like, there's one of those walk-on moments you think, oh, he'll remember that for the rest of his life. He'll tell his grandchildren about that moment. And then he does it again against an all-American, like a McDonald's All-American basketball player. And then I realized, oh my God, Avery Benson is good at basketball. It's not this fluke of like nobody being prepared for Avery Benson. It's that Avery Benson is a hardworking son of a gun who has stuck to the process that Coach Beard laid out before Coach Beard was even at Texas Tech. And we're seeing I think Avery Benson's the best case study of Coach Beard, because it shows somebody like Benson being able to shut somebody down. I can't remember his name. I'm thinking of it. Who is it? Malik Williams? Or is it Nawara? I think it was Nawara. Yeah. something like that. Like that's it's not only a great story, but it's like Texas Tech's reality right now is that we have a dude on the bench who has the like with the way if he played like he did against Louisville, if he continues with that effort, which we know he will, like you're legitimately correct. This is a guy who could start if we have injuries, and even if he just continues to outplay. Like I don't think he's given us any reason to believe he's a liability. That's the facts right now.
Yeah, I'd still make the argument, and I'd be curious to get Albie's take on it.
Yeah, just but, not when but, I'm around. Just I don't want to hear. I don't want to lecture.
Since I'm right, now I want to ask him. But yeah, I think the case should be made. He should keep his minutes even when Jemias comes back, and I hope he keeps a role going forward.
Yep. Okay, so outside of Avery Benson's ascension in the first half, we come back in the second half, and then we get the Chi-Town hustle, Terrence Shannon. Coach Beard decides, I think maybe after the halftime speech, after minutes are kind of counting down, thinks, all right, Shannon knows what to do. Shannon will be careful with the ball. Puts Shannon back in. And, I mean, the guy, like Jay Bayless said, or golly, keep getting his name wrong. Like Jay says, this kid is going to play in the NBA. And I could not agree more. My goodness, the way Shannon can move, the way I think he's really starting to fill in. Like when Jemias comes back, there's going to be a little bit of issue, but there could be. I think the ceiling just got a lot higher for those two because of this experience for Shannon to take over and be that ball handler that Texas Tech needs to move defensive players off others and focus on him. Like you were mentioning, actually, just yeah, tell me what you saw from Shannon in this game, especially with two fouls coming into the second half of the game and playing the way he did to rack up 13 points.
Yeah, that's what's really impressive about a freshman coming in and doing that. Like being knocked off your game early, having to sit that long, and then coming out of the locker room ready to go. It was really about 2.5 minutes left in the game where we made a run. I think we were up 10, and Terrence Shannon comes off a little curl and just no hesitation pulls it up from deep two and sinks it. And it's like, yeah, the kid's got it. He's an NBA player. And I think between him and Jemias, it's going to be so good to getting Moretti back on track once these two are confident and getting to the bucket.
Absolutely. That curl jumper you're talking about, I kind of had an immediate flashback to Keenan Evans last couple of seconds against Texas in Lubbock. And he just kind of walks it down the court, takes it to the, you know, waits for the buzzer to get to buzzer time, pulls it up, ice cold, bang, like nails that basket and we beat Texas. That's that kind of ice in his veins vibe you're starting to get from Shannon, where he's becoming really confident in his game and really confident in his abilities. Not overconfident, hear me right, really confident in his ability to be an absolute baller. And that's what we're going to need going forward. So, and you spoke about Davide Moretti. Let's just talk about him for a second. From an ultimate, at least in his eyes, kind of in a hard pill to swallow, embarrassment on his record, that free throw against DePaul, right? Or was it Creighton? Why am I?
Those two games are blending together.
Yeah, I think it's DePaul, where he misses we get free throws at the end of the game. If he makes two of them, we're pretty much done. The game's over. But he misses a free throw. Everybody freaks out. To be fair, it might be another 100 years before he misses one again, but he misses that one, and he's pretty much saying, like, that's not going to happen again. But not only did the free throws go, all of them go in, he also came alive as a shooter again. I had 18 points on the night, 3 assists, and his 36 minutes of playing. It's about a bucket every 2 minutes, which isn't horrible. It's not horrible at all. So we're getting, like you said, Shannon starting to feel himself out. What'd you like from Moretti in this game?
Yeah, Moretti's still settling into his new role, and it's interesting to see. And I think some of these guys settling into their roles will help him out. And it was funny because I wanted to come in and say, like, oh, he's in a slump. He's his percentage is down. He's shooting 39% from three. That's still really, really, really good. yeah, I wanted to come in and say he's on a slump, but not really. He's not playing as good as I think we expected him to, and as maybe as good as he wants, but he'll get there.
We're all mythologizing Moretti as this Moretti machine that just never misses, and that's just not true. I mean, the guy's a really hard worker. He shoots a lot of baskets out in practice, and so he's got really good percentages, and he's gonna miss one every now and then. So just get used to it, people. But he is getting progressively better. I think 18 is his high for the season so far. So if that's the case, then he's starting to feel himself out. Shannon's starting to feel himself out. Hoping Ramsey comes back and feels well enough and is still playing at that high confidence level. Somebody else I wanted to talk about. Oh, yeah. Chris Clark in this game especially, like you were alluding to earlier, just not being kind of the assist monster that he is. And he had 6 assists in this game, 12 rebounds, 7 points. There were a number of times, I think I tweeted it probably about 2 or 3 times, that Clark, you know, wide open shot, but he decides to hang on to it, pass it away. And whether or not we got points off that possession or not is negligible to me, because it started to notice Louisville's defense switching off of Clark as soon as he got the ball. And there would almost always be a lane for him to take it in. And it's hard to find Clark taking it to the basket unless he's in transition. Like, the only times I've seen him really go for the layup himself is when the game is in transition. But if it's like we're settling down and playing an offensive possession, he's always looking for the pass. Only 7 points. I don't remember how many of those. I don't remember where all those came from. But the one I remember, he did get that 1-3, but it was almost... I'm going to confidently say he would not have taken that had time not expired. But then he makes it as the buzzer goes. And I hope that instilled some confidence in him, because Beard is always, every time they pan over to Beard when Clark's like, pass the ball or whatever, it seems like Beard is constantly like, hey, you know, try a shot. Hey, take a shot. Hey, take it to the basket. Do you think this is going to be... I think we've got 2 trajectories we're looking at. Either Chris Clark continues to be unselfishly annoying, or there comes a time where Chris Clark starts to take shots. How do you feel? I mean, do you feel like one is more inevitable than the other?
I think you saw progress from Vegas to Louisville. It wasn't enough, but you at least saw him drive to the rim a few times. And I think it's just a matter of coaching and confidence, and he'll get there. I challenge anyone who says he's not good for this team. I will fight you to death. He's too valuable. He had 12 rebounds when there was a 7-footer on the floor.
Absolutely.
That's insane. He's, you know, he's hardly even a forward in my eyes.
Right.
So I think he's insanely valuable, and I think he'll get coached into playing a little bit more aggressively. And that's not to say shooting, but driving, and then driving and kicking.
Right. So let's talk about Stephen Enoch, the best game plan for Louisville, a giant of a human being, 260 pounds. He can touch the ceiling if he jumps. And early on, this recipe for disaster for Texas Tech was Enoch. I think the first points they got were they just passed it in quickly to Enoch. He laid it up real nice. Nobody really challenged him. And my tweet was, oh, no. Louisville's paying attention, and they just pass it to their big man. This is going to be a long night, or something like that. And sure enough, in that first half, man, passing it off to Enoch, it was just easy money for them. And most of their points, I can't remember how many, but I think all 10 of their points in the first half, or not all 10, 10 of their 28 points, excuse me, was from Enoch. Maybe a little less, but they had a lot, and I was just like, this is over, because if they just continue to pass to Enoch, we're done. But then halftime comes, Mark Adams gets the team down, and they do what Texas Tech did best last year, halftime adjustments. Oh my God, finally. Yes, Las Vegas, the halftime adjustments were pretty, if they happened, they were hard to see. But against Louisville, if you weren't paying attention, Enoch was pretty much non-existent in the second half. And it's because Adams and Beard recognized what Louisville was doing. It's the same thing they did all year, was setting up these like weird screens to pull people forward and leave Enoch by himself that he could, you know, work around whoever's defending him. And just because he's a giant human being, there's nothing you can do for that. But we suddenly, I think more times than not, we were in the 3-2 screen. But one of the screeners, like, or one of the defenders near the basket would always be on alert. And the announcers kept saying it during the game that they're just watching the ball. They're not watching the players. And that was so crucial because every time Louisville was setting up to dump it off to Enoch, somebody knew. And it was usually Chris Clark. But somebody saw it, recognized it, and then played the ball. And so many times we created turnovers from Louisville trying to make Enoch happen. I cannot express the gravity of the intelligence that Mark Adams has, but I hope that everybody recognized that Enoch was a problem in the first half. He was not a problem in the second half.
Yeah, it seemed like the game plan was to front Enoch and make it a really challenging throw to the post, and it resulted in a lot of turnovers. And then when he did catch it, the help was there. So yeah, credit to that defensive staff for looking into that.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other lines from this game that you really liked, you want to talk about or anything like that?
No, I think I stand Chris Clark enough in this podcast. So.
Hey, I'd love to. Okay, you stand Chris Clark. I don't stand him, but he's obviously one of the best players for us defensively, transitionally, all
most
of that.
Important player on our team.
He is definitely the MIP.
MIP,
the MIP. Russ, big Russ, getting his time to shine. Madison Square Garden, gets in, immediately blocks a shot. Yes! Yes, dude! I'm like, okay, they have a big guy in the field. We do not have a big guy in the court. Put Russ in. We put Russ in because TJ Holyfield's racking him up. And then Russ, what's he do? Just blocks him. Gets that block. And then really doesn't do anything else the rest of the game. But pay attention, people. This is the birth of a Texas Tech legend, hopefully. valuable experience. And yeah, y'all just keep paying attention to Chris Beard feeding Russ Chewa some minutes, because it's going to matter. It's going to matter later on when he actually gets a hold of his size and gets into the system. So, but outside of that, I don't really know. That's kind of it. Big win for Texas Tech. Big loss for Louisville, but also not really. If they were number one for a while and they lost, then that would be different. But a lot of number ones have gone down this season. It's not going to be the last time. A lot of top five teams. I think most commentators are acknowledging that this season is a pretty level playing field. From top 25, way beyond, you know, the breadth of basketball. If SFA can beat Duke, you know, anybody can beat anybody, it seems like. So big things that we learned, in my opinion, and I'd love to get your take on it, Dylan, is one, that we can make it happen without Jemias, and that two, this season is a long way from over. And I think that our hopes at a Big 12 conference championship are still alive, and a hope at a deep run in the tournament is still very alive.
Yeah, I think Louisville gave me hope that we can get it done without Jemias, but getting him back will be really nice. But Louisville is a really good team, a really, really good defensive team, and the fact that we were able to at least get a little rhythm and score on them is encouraging. And I think another tournament run is in the books for this team.
Absolutely. Coming up next for the Red Raiders, it's going to be a little easier of a stint. But hey, like Beard says, respect every opponent. I'm not going to go out here and pretend like we're about to crush everybody. Next up we have, who is it?
Blanking. Southern Miss, Golden Eagles.
We got the Golden Eagles. And then we got Rio Grande Valley. then CSB, which can't...
So nobody until conference
play. Nobody until conference.
And I would expect another basketball podcast before conference play gets going.
Absolutely. We may just wrap up all three into one unless something wild happens. Who knows? December's hard. Lots of holidays, lots of traveling. But the Air Raid podcast is here for you guys. So hopefully Texas Tech will move into conference play at 9-3. We'll recap it as it goes. And then in January... we can start off this whole conference tourney or this conference win thing with Oklahoma State. So with that being said, congratulations to all the students who finished finals. You survived. I promise you it doesn't get any better after this. Dylan, is there anything you want to close with?
No, follow the Air Raid podcast. I'll start tweeting from it again as soon as I get that password.
There you go. When we... I don't have the pat. Okay, when we get it all figured out, when we get this whole air, this little podcast technicality Twitter thing figured out, be sure to follow us, like us, show us your love. We'd love to expand this thing, get people on, fans on, get a part of other podcasts, have the big guns on, you name it, we want it to happen. So thanks everybody for listening to our recap of Las Vegas and the big Louisville win. For Dylan and myself, this has been a large basketball recap pod by the Air Raid podcast, future name pending. Stay wrecked, people.